Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Health Matters. In this show, we'll be discussing happiness and how to become happier people. We kick off our mental health edition of Health Matters this evening. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, and I'm here along with my co-worker and co-colleague, Shelley Visconti, who's a licensed professional counselor and a marriage and family therapist. You know, Shelley, everybody really wants to be happy, but obtaining happiness can often be a real challenge. So what are the practices of happy people, and what techniques can we learn in order to live happier lives? Those are our questions for tonight. I want to welcome our guests also tonight. They are two people who I have known for a long time, worked with for a long time, and both of them are in very stressful jobs, but they still maintain a strong sense of happiness, of personal happiness and professional happiness. They are Chief Wayne Smith, who's the Assistant Chief of Police for the Support Division here in Shreveport, and Chief Lewis Johnson, who's the Chief Training Officer for the Shreveport Fire Department. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here with us this evening.
Thank you so much, Doc, for having us. It's our pleasure.
Glad to be here, Dr. Vegan.
We also want to invite all of you, our listeners over the Red River Radio listening area, to call in with any of your questions or your comments to our show tonight, 1-800-552-8502. So let's get started. Shelley, you've been doing some research on what's new and what may be somewhat controversial. Did you find anything interesting in the research studies that you want to report?
Yeah, I found some interesting things about money and specifically spending money and how we spend money. It might be a little counterintuitive, but actually spending money on others brings more happiness than does spending money on ourselves. Spending on money on ourselves tends to give us that jolt, but it's very short-lived, mm-hmm. whereas spending money on other people tends to, the happiness that goes along with that tends to last longer, and overall that the happiness gains are more so when we spend on others. Also, another interesting thing is regarding income. You know, you would think that when you get a raise that you would get really happy, which is the case. People do experience happiness when they get a raise, but that happiness increase is short-lived. We very quickly become accustomed to that new standard of living, and so our happiness goes back down.
So we kind of accommodate to it or habituate to it.
Yeah. It we no longer are quite as happy with the money anymore. Another interesting thing is regarding gender and how happiness impacts men and women. One thing that I think men need to understand is that stress has a bigger impact on them than does stress on women. And this is because men just don't cope as well as women. Men tend to adopt what we would call maladaptive coping strategies. So they might drink. They might engage in some kind of violent behavior when they are unhappy. Women, on the other hand, will tend to engage in more adaptive coping strategies. So they will seek out social support. They'll process these negative feelings. And so men, really, one thing that we can suggest is that men focus on those coping skills and developing better coping skills, because that will help them regarding stress. Happiness regarding men. Men, when they are happy, their life expectancy goes up pretty dramatically. Women, when they're happy, their life expectancy goes up, but not as much as men. So men have greater rewards regarding life expectancy when they're happy. But also, there's a downside to that. When men are stressed out, that impacts them more so also. The final thing that I wanted to talk about is actually very close to home, and it's Louisiana is the happiest place. That's a recent study that found that we are a really happy state. Also with Hawaii and Florida and Arizona and Tennessee. And basically what the researchers looked at was that they attribute some of this happiness to the fact that Louisiana is a very sunny place. There are a lot of outdoor activities. And so they attributed a lot of the happiness that we experience here in Louisiana to some of that sunniness and outdoors activities.
I think I saw something on television about that just recently.
This is very recent that this has come out. And interestingly, New York State is the least happy state.
Mm. I hope they're not in our broadcasting area. Listen, before we bring in the Chiefs, because I think that they're going to have some things to comment on, given what you just said, particularly about men not reaching out for social support, where women are more prone to do that, and because I think the Chiefs are going to speak about that. But let me ask you, what can you tell us from the research about the habits of happy people?
Well, happy people, some of these things I've already touched on a little bit, but happy people tend to engage in more pro-social behaviors. So they volunteer more. They contribute to different causes more financially and also of their time. They are more connected to the community. So they're out there in the community, really connecting with others and really giving back to the community. They also show greater resilience. So when they are hit with hardships, hit with difficult times, they are more resilient. They socialize more frequently. They exercise more frequently. They also express gratitude more frequently. And they also possess better coping skills.
Well, let me ask you, Chief Smith, Chief Johnson, I mean, both of you men have spent many of your entire careers in professions that are dealing constantly with tragedy, with conflict resolution. People are calling you when they're in trouble. Things are going wrong. What comments do you guys have about these research studies that Shelley's been talking about and these habits of happy people? And I guess my real question is, how do you, as men in these very difficult and demanding positions, how do you maintain and take responsibility for your own personal happiness?
Well, I absolutely do concur with the study in both our occupations. Inherently, we see the worst of the worst situations and have to deal with it, you know, like normal people do. I think in my profession, being a police officer, some of the stressors we use to de-stress, to deal with it, is the peer companionship that is inherently built within the profession. We rely on each other quite a bit for the support. And, of course, there are things we participate in beyond work, such as exercise, volunteering in the community, and the list goes on and on. How about you, Chief Johnson?
I think that one of the things that helps us along is realizing that the job and the things that we encounter are very much part of the job. So as much as we would rather not respond to people who are hurting, tragedy and things like that, we recognize that that's what we do and it's part of the job. So, but along with recognizing that, in addition to that, it gives us a sense of purpose to be able to respond to people at their worst times, when they need help the most, and know that when we respond, that our goal is to do whatever we can in order to help them as a firefighter, as a paramedic, as an advocate in whatever area. So it really helps to know that we have some limitations on what we can do. But the job is very rewarding simply because the career is filled with a purpose of helping others. And if that is something that you enjoy, or that helps you feel like you're making a positive difference, even though it's tragedy that you're responding to, it makes you feel that it's worthwhile in every way.
You know, as a psychologist, people come to me with various conflicts and problems, too. You know, I'm not, responding to the streets, you know, when people have been in terrible accidents or been shot or anything like that. But it seems to me, as a psychologist, that it's a great privilege that I have to be invited into people's lives and to be able to help them at appropriate times when they're asking for it.
You're so correct, Doc. One of the things we talk about in very new to new police officers is that there's going to come a time within your career where you'll have to change gears. You won't only have to play the role of police officer. You may have to be the doctor, the counselor, whatever it takes at the time.
Good point, yeah. Shelley, let me just back up a quick minute. Can you kind of give a little bit more meaning to the idea of the words coping skills?
Sure, yeah. Basically, it's our ability to bounce back from hardships. So those are the emotional tools that we have in our toolbox. And those tools can be negative or they can be positive. So, for example, a positive tool would be, let's say you have a bad day at work. And a tool that you might use would be to talk with a friend, process the negative events of the day. Whereas a negative tool might be to drink, to get drunk, and deal with the situation that way.
Chief Johnson, do you have any particular definitions or ideas in your life of your coping skills, things you do?
I would say I'm very blessed to have been in the field for over 30 years. So obviously, with that much time, you have to find a way in order to deal with the stresses that come along with the job itself. One of the things I find that has helped me in my career, and as I train other firefighters or new firefighters, I teach them or I try and share with them the normalcy of the things that we feel. So when we encounter someone who's hurt bad, or when we encounter someone who is in a bad situation and we feel compassion, or if we feel fear, or if we feel whatever it is that we feel, we recognize that that is natural and normal to a great degree. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we find that helps us with coping skills is part of our training, because we recognize that our job itself is not necessary. It does not necessarily expose us to normal things. It's not normal to go to people who are inside of burning houses. It's not normal to go to someone who is in a terrible wreck and who's hurt in a bad way. There's only a small group of responders who do what firefighters do and who do what police officers do. So because of that, training is very important, and we provide that training early on. In the academy, we began to teach them the importance of preparing to do those things that others do not do. Preparing to see things that others would not see. And so that helps a great deal. So I think that between training and then the ever-present advantage of experience, the more you do it, the more you see it, the more capable you are of dealing with those things. So I think that all of those things become a part of coping, along with dealing with and sharing with people who have done it before you.
Let me change the pace a little bit here and come back to you, Shelley, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this question. What are some techniques that people can learn about so that they can grow their own personal happiness?
There are the research and the studies that I did. There are a ton of different things that we can do. And I kind of chose a few for us to discuss that I think that everybody can fit into their lives.
Okay.
One of the things is just talking with close family and friends and drawing strength from them and processing things with them and drawing support from them. I know that we are all on Facebook and we text and things like that, and that's fine, but that really doesn't take the place of just a good old sit-down face-to-face talk. So really, to get the full benefit of talking with someone, we really need to do it face-to-face. Laughter and humor, those are two things that are great for our happiness, but also physiologically, they're really beneficial. There are cardiovascular benefits. Also, laughter and humor actually lower our blood pressure. So those things are going to be beneficial in many ways.
Didn't you tell me about a study of some women who had lost husbands and laughter? Wasn't there such a study?
Yeah, actually, what the study involved was they asked women who had recently lost loved ones, spouses, to give a little recollection of their spouses, to talk a little bit about the spouses. And they found that the women who actually laughed and told kind of humorous stories while they were having these recollections, when they followed them later, they found that they showed more resilience, that their bereavement, it was farther along in the process, and that they were happier. So they were actually moving on with their lives and experiencing more happiness than the women who didn't necessarily use humor and laughter when they were describing their spouses.
Hmm. Well, Doc, shouldn't people develop activities that really make them happy? I know for me as a police officer, it makes me happy and helped relieve stress to exercise, to be a gardener, to, you know, just a lot of different things.
Seems to me, Chief, like you're the crawfish champion eater or something like that? Or?
Absolutely, for about 4 years in a row, because I enjoyed eating crawfish.
And you win some type of tournament every year?
At Mudbud Madness at the North Shreveport Business Association. I'd love to challenge you.
I'm going to pass.
Makes me happy.
I understand.
We have a caller, so I'm going to, I believe it is Kimber from Bossier City, so I'm going to let Kimber ask her question.
Okay.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are y'all?
Good.
Great.
Good. I was calling. I have a question. I am a very busy mom. I work full-time. I go to school full-time. I have my child full-time, and I was just seeing what some suggestions that you had to incorporate happiness into my everyday busy life.
There are several things that you can do, actually, Kimber. Just showing compassion for others, but also compassion for yourself. It's very important, especially being a busy mom, a busy person in general, to to really think about how you treat yourself and how you speak to yourself. And then also expressing gratitude. So if you do have somebody that's helping out with your child, to thank them and to make sure that they understand how much you appreciate them. And then trying to be more optimistic, to really try to look on the bright side of things.
Shelley, I was told once by someone that you should always figure out how to take some time for yourself. Would that apply to her?
Absolutely. I think so. You know, we have to practice self-care. So we have to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of other people. We have another caller. Actually, we have Kelly from Alexandria. Kelly?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Good. I guess one comment or thought I was having was is that I think oftentimes with regards to happiness or success, we're wanting the one thing, the magic bullet, the one thing that can make us happy or successful or whatever. And oftentimes it's more of a multimodal approach, that there's more than one thing that's going to get me to wherever, whatever goal I'm looking for. And I guess the question is, how do expectations play a part of happiness?
Dr. Vegan, you want to field that question?
Well, I agree with you. There's a big difference between expectations and what really is. And a lot of times, I think it's best to focus on what really is, or I try personally to focus on what is happening, what is reality, versus what do I think it should be. And a lot of times I find in my own life that my thinking is what's most bothersome to me, not what really happens to be going on. So, of course, my wife tells me, expect less, be not disappointed, or something like that. But I think that expectations is a big issue. Chiefs, do you guys have some things to say about that?
Oh, I agree with him 100%. For me, I've got a big basket of things that make me happy. And depending on the day of the week, what I put out of the basket, what makes me happy.
Yeah, I think happy people generally have many baskets.
Yes.
And they have many eggs in various baskets.
I think he made a very good point when he says that oftentimes we associate our happiness with our success or those things that we are in pursuit of. But that's kind of dangerous, because if that's the case, once I accomplish those things, then my happiness would be affected by it. So as a rule, I try not to associate my happiness with what I do as much as who I am. And with that being the case, I guess what I do, what works best for me, is not confusing success with progress. Mm-hmm. So if I view everything as progress, then I've never really completely succeeded. And therefore, that happiness would linger a bit longer, if you would.
Yeah, we in mental health say we want to seek progress, not perfection.
We have another caller that's a related kind of question. Is happiness transient, or can it be a perpetual state? What do y'all think about that?
Guys?
I think from day to day that can change. But if you've got many baskets and you want to be happy, if one thing doesn't work, then try something different.
I like to think that it is a perpetual state. I would like to think that if that is who you are, then regardless as to what the circumstances are, what comes your way, you will find a way to view that and accept it in such a way that it does not negatively impact your happiness.
Okay.
Great. We have another caller. We have Renee from Shreveport. Go ahead, Renee.
Hello. How are you all tonight?
Doing great. Great.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I'm calling because although I'm doing very well, I think I have been a widow for a little over 2 years. And as I said, I think I'm doing really well. But I still, even, you know, with, I have very supportive family. I have a supportive church. I heard you talking about the laughter earlier when you tell the stories about your spouse, and my spouse was very funny, and so you know, I've got that going for me too. But even though I'm doing well most of the time, I don't have the full-blown depression, you know, like I did the first year and year and a half. But these past 6 months, I still, maybe I'm asking too much, but I really thought that I would be pretty much over my grief. I mean, my bad grief, my sadness, that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that I can do to, you know, to keep from having those the kind of fits of sadness that just come from time to time. Can you give me an advice of, you know, what I might be able to do about that?
Gentlemen, y'all have an answer for this lady?
Well, thank you for your question and for sharing something so personal. It's really, really good to hear from you. My thought about it is that you don't want to push the river upstream. And what I mean by that is, thinking back to our earlier question about expectations, there's no rules about how long an individual experiences grief or when he or she should sort of come out of that process. And it almost sounds you want to be careful to not put expectations on yourself that I should be at a different point than I am right now. And rather, it's better to go back inside and to look at all the good things that you've articulated, but also to look at yourself that and acknowledge the feelings that you have, embrace the feelings that you have, and decide that there's still something more that I have to learn in my life from the experience of losing my husband.
Well, I'd like to add that, you know, it's important that we not ruminate, that instead of focusing on what we've lost, that we really focus on what we've gained by having that person in our life. And often when we lose somebody, it's so difficult not to just focus on the loss. But really, if you can try to focus on what you've gained, then that will help you to feel more positive and hopefully bring you some happiness.
Mm-hmm. You're so correct. I hope I often hear people speak of a eulogy as somewhat being a celebration where you, in fact, do focus all your attention on all the great things that someone did, what they brought to your life. Focus more attention in that direction instead of the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, we have another caller. We have Kim from Shreveport. Kim, go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if there's research that tells us really what financial status might have to do with happiness. You know, the old cliche, money doesn't buy happiness, and of course there are a million variations and jokes of that stuff. But do we know, you know, does working, does being successful, does being financially well off, financially strapped, how much difference does that really make?
The financial aspect, really what we found through the research is that we become accustomed to the money we have. So even if we have money, we often want more. Really what, as far as success, happy people tend to be more successful, and successful people tend to be more happy. So rather than focusing on the money that comes from our success, to focus on the happiness, perhaps, that comes from our success. Gentlemen, do y'all have anything to add?
I think the happiness comes from focusing on the things that are really, really meaningful in your life, and that means the most to you, that you remember and look forward to.
Kim, I think that was a very good question. I was just that's an excellent question, and not only is it a good question, that means that you're giving it enough thought that you don't just accept that because we have one status or another that is going to automatically equate to happiness. Sometimes we do that, so. That's a good, very good question. I appreciate that.
And Kim, I'd like to just bring a little bit of information to your question too. And that is, there's some recent research about money and how much people make and effective parenting. And I can't recall exactly where it comes from, but they were talking about families, two parents with two children, making between $80,000 and $100,000 a year, being the group of people that were most effective at parenting. Obviously, if you are living in poverty, it's very difficult to be a quality parent. But on the other end, if people are very, very wealthy, it's also incredibly difficult to be a very good parent. And this study was focusing on what's the optimum amount of money in the United States for effective parenting. And I think if a person was making, a family's making $80,000, there wasn't much difference between $80,000 and $100,000. The $100,000 people have more opportunity to go out to dinner and maybe drive a little bit better car or something, but the quality of their parenting seems to peak at that point, because there are big problems when people have a lot of money, a lot of wealth in parenting, and big problems when people are impoverished in parenting. The extremes are very difficult.
We have another caller. We have Ashley from Benton. Go ahead, Ashley.
Hi, I am a health conscious person, and I was curious to know how happiness is beneficial to my health.
Well, happiness is going to benefit your health in numerous ways. Actually, you're going to have fewer doctor's visits. That's what the research shows us. You're also going to heal faster. So if you have an injury or surgery, you're going to heal faster than someone who's unhappy. You're going to have a longer life. And also, there are going to be some mental brain benefits in addition to the body benefits. Your learning and your memory is going to be better. People who are unhappy tend to have impaired memory and learning. Also, you're going to have lower rates of depression and anxiety. So there are going to be really a lot of great benefits to being happy, and it's going to help your healthiness.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Do you have another caller or at this point, Shelley?
Nope.
Okay. So I could ask another question or two. Would that be all right?
Yes, go right ahead.
Regarding one of the earlier questions, I wanted to ask Chief Johnson a question. He and I were talking about this at the academy or somewhere the other day, and that was the difference between happiness and joy. Chief, do you want to comment on that?
I would say that sometimes we often look at the two, and some people kind of view them as the same. I do not so much. I think that happiness oftentimes is associated with specific things as it relates to where you are or what's happening or things that cause you to be happy.
Situational factors.
Situational in that respect. Or as I often say, happiness is sometimes related to what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so and joy is more of a state that is going to be consistent regardless as to what the circumstances are, regardless as to what the outlook is or what's going on. So I think that the difference is that joy is something that is internal, and I think the basis of it is internal at best. And happiness oftentimes can be associated with those things that are happening on the outside, those things that you can attribute to and thereby view it as attributing to you.
One of the things that I've thought about on that question that I wanted to throw out to you is my belief is that I can engage in practices that increase my happiness, but that the joy that I have in my life, those things come spontaneously and sometimes quite unexpectedly. Your thoughts about that?
I would agree with that, in that I've always felt that. I grew up with the belief that happiness is greater than myself and that it is not of myself. So if I am not the one that was the source of that happiness, of that joy, if you would, not only can I not give it to myself, as long as I stay connected to the source of my joy, I cannot, and circumstances cannot take that away. Mm-hmm. I find that happiness oftentimes, if it is associated with someone or something, once that someone or that something goes away or is displaced, then that is the possibility that my happiness that is associated with it is displaced also.
Would, in fact, the joy in your life encompass your whole world from the holistic perspective, everything that's going on in your world?
Well, it certainly could. It's not been the way I've thought about it, but I think one can certainly see that, yes.
Yes.
Do we have another call?
We do, but before I get to the caller, I'd like to invite more callers. If you would, call 1-800-552-8502, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. We have Veronica from Shreveport. Go ahead, Veronica.
Good evening. I have a question. I wanted to know, inquire, do you believe that people who are 40-plus are happier being single or being married?
Gentlemen, what do y'all think about that?
Well, I guess that would depend on the circumstances for which you are, however you are. What do you think?
I don't know if age is related to it. In my mind, I would just think that it would be dependent upon what it is that your desire is on whatever age. Because if one is to put it in a age group, then one would think that because I am married, then that would ensure my happiness. Or if I am single, then that would ensure my happiness. So that type of connection is only a part of a whole, I think.
Sure.
So
sure.
I think that if I'm 50 and I'm with someone, if I'm a happy person, I'm going to be happy if I'm with them or if I'm not with them, and so forth and so on. So I don't know if there will be an age that one could connect to that. So it's an interesting question, but I don't know the answer to it.
We have another caller. We have Kara from Alabama. Kara, go ahead.
Yes, I was calling to see if you could give me some advice with my children, kind of always seeing the negative side of things instead of the positive, and maybe some things I could do to help change that for them.
Thanks. Gentlemen, what about y'all have kids? What do y'all think about that?
Well, I try to, as much as possible, build on the successes of my kids and not so much as the negative things. In other words, I try to build optimism all the time. So therefore, they won't focus much on the negative side of life. How about you, Chief Johnson?
I think that Ms. Kara obviously loves her children.
Absolutely.
And she is of the opinion that if they are more positive, then
yes,
they would have a better life, better existence, and view things differently.
Absolutely.
So I wish that there was something that we could all do to cause our children to view things in a more positive way, to have a more positive outlook, to pursue the positive. So, but of course, if there was an answer to that, we could all do very well if we had that answer. But I think that's a clear sign of caring about people when you want the best for them.
Yes.
And you even want them to be able to appreciate the better things or the more positive things as opposed to those things that are less than that.
And hug them and tell them you love them.
That
whichever way
stuff.
Life turns out.
Well, I think it's the psychological issue there is that if you put out acceptance and love,
yes,
you'll get acceptance and love back.
Yes.
If you put out anger and paranoia, you'll get people around you that are angry and paranoid. So putting out and modeling for the children, I think, is the best answer to that. Shelley, do we have another question?
Flow. Are you gentlemen familiar with the concept of flow, what that is?
Tell us.
Actually, it's what we're doing right now. Hopefully, what we're doing right now. Flow basically is just being absorbed in an activity, not thinking about tomorrow, not thinking about what happened yesterday, but really being absorbed in an activity that is intrinsically rewarding, challenging, but not terribly anxiety provoking. So something that we enjoy that's going to push us some, but not be overwhelming. So, for example, last night I slept fine. Not too much anxiety, but as I got a little closer to airtime today, a little anxiety, but not too bad. So right now I'm flowing. I'm thinking about what I'm doing right now and not thinking about tomorrow and not thinking about yesterday.
I have a question for Shelley as it relates to that. Now, as it relates to flow, and that's interesting, in sports sometimes we refer to being in a zone, if you would, where everything is going so well, no matter what happens, if it comes across the plate, I'm going to hit it. If I get the ball, I'm going to make the basket. And you're just moving forward and being able to be at your best during that time, whatever that activity is. So would flow and being in a zone, if you would that be closely related or have anything in common at all, you think?
Well, I personally have zero athletic ability, but that's exactly what they're talking about. Okay. You know, my understanding is that flow is being in the zone. It's okay. Just being in the here and now, enjoying it, pushing yourself, but not getting stressed out.
Okay. You know, this is a great privilege for us to be here tonight and to talk to our listeners, try to connect with the listeners at Red River Radio. What a great privilege, and we're just grateful to be here.
Yeah.
And it's fun to be here, and hopefully those of you that are listening will call in, be part of this discussion with us, flow with us, I guess.
No doubt about it, because not only do I learn from each of you, I learn from the questions that call-in audience call and ask.
Yeah, that's true.
They're very thought-provoking.
Well, Shelley, let me ask you this question. What's the difference between flow and savoring?
Savoring is when you really, really enjoy things. It really take things in. So that morning cup of coffee, not just guzzling it down, really enjoying it. So it's intensifying, prolonging, pleasurable experiences. One of the things that the researchers recommend that we do is living like a tourist. So instead of driving to work or driving to the grocery store and just kind of getting there and not noticing the things around you, really observe and appreciate the things that you might otherwise take for granted.
So that's like moving from automatic to living in the moment and being aware.
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
And I think there's a direct connection to that, to being happy, really, really appreciating what you have.
Absolutely. That's gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude.
Absolutely.
Shelley, let's see. Do we have another question?
We certainly do. Nana from Alexandria, we have a question.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to see if you all could help a little. I'm having problems with depression. I take care of my 86-year-old mom, and the area she lives in and I'm staying with her is rather remote, and I just wanted to see if you guys had any ideas for me.
Gentlemen, what do y'all think about that?
Well, I, too, have been in a similar situation before, as you speak of. And it was a great consolation to me knowing that I was doing all that I could to help my loved one. And eventually, as the inevitable happened, that was my coping mechanism and dealing with the stress of it, knowing that I did my very best. So just something to think about.
Chief?
I would think that I would simply tell her to be encouraged daily. And then to be able to know that you are, first of all, you have the blessing of being able to be with your mother. So that's a plus in itself. And so simply do the best that you can, be the best that you can, and continue to look for the positives in the things that you do day to day, no matter where you are, what you're doing. But that's a good thing, to be able to have a heart to care for someone that you care about. So that's a good thing. And we compliment you on that.
We have another caller. We have Randall from Shreveport. Go right ahead, Randall.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Is depression relevant in terms of happiness and a family history? I think the caller mentioned maybe parenting and children. Can happiness in one's family genetically affect whether they're able to be happy?
Dr. Began, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I know that the research, Randall says that, I think you quoted it, Shelley, to me the other day, that 50%?
Yes, about 50% of the research at 40 to 50, some of the research varies a little bit. But yeah, the research shows that about 40 to 50% of happiness is genetically determined through various personality characteristics that are associated with happiness. So acceptance, neuroticism tends to be negatively associated with happiness. So being more open, extroverted, agreeable.
But certainly depression, you know, many depressions, some depression is familial. So people are at a greater risk, are they not, for having depressive illnesses if they have a positive family history for depression.
Certainly.
Similar to alcoholism, for example, or even schizophrenia. So, you know, I would think off the top of my head that people who have a positive family history for depression and who themselves are experiencing depression have a greater challenge and have to really focus more on the resources and the coping skills that we've talked about in order to attain happiness.
Yeah, it's not that these people can't be happy. They just may have to put a little more effort, a little more focus on that.
I think depression is a very treatable a condition, as is anxiety.
Absolutely. We treat it every day.
Every day and see good results.
We have another caller. We have Scott from Ruston. Go right ahead, Scott.
Hi, how you doing? I'm listening to the show, and the subject intrigued me, and I noticed that the speakers on the show seem to all have very high stress or high activity careers. And I'm wondering how you guys deal with the happiness factor in your relationship with your significant other, and how you go about maintaining, a happy relationship with all those added stresses in your life.
Well, a great question, and we often talk about that within the ranks of our organization, how important it is to accept how important family is into your life, and to be able to leave the job at the job and give your spouse 100% of your focus. Spend time, do quality things, go to church, find things that both of you enjoy. But spend time together. That's so important. And I think that, among many other things that we could talk about, would help to build and maintain a great quality relationship.
Within the fire service, we train on what is referred to as critical incident stress management. And part of that is that we know that in our line of work that we encounter occasional incidents that are critical. And because they're critical, they do have an impact on us. And we would like to be able to see some really tough things or have a very traumatic experience and just forget about it and leave it alone completely. But sometimes you do not have the ability to do that. Right. So you do have to identify what type of outlets or assistance there is for you. And if necessary, utilize those things as best you can and simply recognize that the job can be stressful. And we have to do the best that we can to separate what we do every day from those relationships. And though I think that it's, we do a good job overall, it's not necessarily always easy and does have the potential to be challenging.
Shelley, do you have another question?
We certainly do. We have a caller. Before we get to the next caller, though, I'd like to invite everybody out there. If you have a question, please give us a call at 1-800-552-8502. Right now, we have Joshua from Pineville. Go right ahead, Joshua.
I don't really have any questions. I have a comment for the lady who called a minute ago about being a caregiver for her mother.
That's great. We need all the help we can get.
No offense to you guys who gave your advice from your own experiences, but as someone who's been a caregiver himself, if I were in her place, comments would not have helped at all. Ma'am, do not feel at all guilty for being depressed. You need to be given care as well as your mother. That is the number one thing when you're a caregiver, is you cannot give proper care if you yourself are too drained and depressed and everything else. Take breaks. Find help. Do not be ashamed to ask for help from other loved ones, even for an hour or two. Go out, have dinner by yourself, find a friend, talk to people online, get help. Do not just settle in that depression and think, one day I'll be okay and I'll be happy because I helped my mother. No, you deserve to have some happiness now. You deserve to not deal with that suffering and grief right now. Get some help.
Thank you so much, Joshua. I think that's great advice. In order to care for others, we need to care for ourselves first. So really practicing some self-care, making sure that we take care of ourselves, making sure that we get the sleep, that we get the breaks that we need, and asking for help if we need it. I think that's a great point from Joshua. We actually have another caller. We have Patricia from Shreveport. Go right ahead, Patricia.
The question that I have is basically for the chiefs, dealing with their jobs day to day with the public, whether it be emergencies or fires. How does it affect, per se, your personal or your home life?
Well, it definitely does. Police and firemen, we feel the same emotional pain that anyone else feels. but we find, you know, ways to deal with it through our relationships with each other. We got a big family in blue that we rely on. That's all the firemen and policemen. We talk to each other. That's our crying post. How about you, Chief Johnson?
I agree with that. And I think that, as you said earlier, I think everyone is basically doing the same thing, trying to do the best that we can, whatever the situation is. So even as it relates to those things that we see day to day, we try to minimize the effect that it has on our family and try and separate it as best we can and prioritize, I would say.
You know, Chief Johnson, you were talking to me about the other day about you when you were in sleeping at the fire stations and so on and working on trucks and so forth. You were known as a sleepyhead. Is that true?
That's correct.
And you also related a story about a particular incident. Could you tell our audience what the story was?
Yes. I made mention of me being a paramedic, and myself and the units at the station having responded to a very critical run, whereas the person had been not only I guess it's safe to say that the person, it was a murder, if you would, and the person was hurt in a bad way. And when we got back to the station, whereas normally I would go straight to bed, it's maybe 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I would normally go straight to bed. But that particular run, I went down into the day room, just kind of sat down for a moment. And after so doing, the other guys, when they came in one at a time, would each come down. And after sitting down, we began to talk about just different aspects of the run. And I felt that that was a means for us to kind of diffuse, if you would, or a means for us to kind of discuss and kind of talk ourselves down from that incident so that we could manage it a bit better. And so those are one of the ways that we do that. As Chief Smith just said, we count on each other, we communicate with each other, and we try and find a way to deal with those things that we see every day.
I think there's really no substitute to that which a human being can bring you.
Shelley, do we have another question?
We certainly do. We have Bob from Bossier. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello, this is Bob. I have more of a comment. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and about a year after I got back from Vietnam, severe depression set in. And so it kind of sneaks up on you, and it, you know, you don't know what to do about it. You're used to being a happy person. And so at that time, my future wife introduced me to Buddhism, you know, and I've heard that, you know, meditation each day is a very important thing. It helps you live longer, helps you be happier. And I'm here to tell you, after 40 years practicing, you know, I've chanted Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. You probably heard it in the Tina Turner movie. And we've been doing it every day, and brick by brick, this depression was replaced in my head. And, you know, even my wife had some certain problems, and she went for professional help. You know, she went to a psychiatrist, and she got medicine that helped her because she had a chemical imbalance. But all through all this, we've been chanting this Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. And I found that when I start out each day and I end each day that way, it really, really brings out my happiness.
Thank you so much, Bob. I think that that's a really important point to make, is that mindfulness or meditation is something that can tremendously help our peace of mind and bring happiness to us. Even mindful prayer, which is, you know, a form of meditation. Those are all things that the research shows over and over again just bring us a tremendous amount of peace and joy and overall happiness. So thanks so much for bringing that up. We have another caller. We actually have Kim from Texas. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I work in a creative field. I'm actually a writer. And, of course, that's something, I mean, I get a lot of joy and happiness out of what I do, and I'm very lucky that I get to do it for a living. But, of course, it comes with a lot of rejection and people who
don't like. There's just a lot of feedback sometimes that can be very negative, and it makes it hard sometimes to feel creative and to find that happiness again. And I was wondering if, you know, if you had something that you could tell me that might help bring that happiness back sometimes when I feel that way.
Could she, in fact, look at the negative part of it as an opportunity instead of it being negative?
Speak more about what you mean.
Yes, to me, it sounds like the negative part that you hear would give you another opportunity to view your writings from a different perspective.
Hmm. Well, the whole idea of flow really would be important, I think, for a writer. You know, we're writers, but we're kind of technical report writers. We're not creative writers like you sound like you are. I'm reminded of Graham Greene and some of the great American writers spending all day, 8 hours, to just write one page, and how absolutely difficult creative writing can sometimes be. But somehow getting the inner muse and cutting off the world and allowing one's inner self to come out, I guess, might be the key to that. But I'm not too much of a creative person, so you're probably way ahead of me on understanding that creative process.
I am a very creative person. And I understand exactly where Kim's coming from, because doing visual art myself and going to critiques and having people critique my work, it can be very difficult because you're putting a piece of yourself up on the wall or on a page. And it's just trying to maintain optimism, trying to think about all the things that you do right instead of focusing on all the things that you do wrong, and trying to take that criticism and turn it into constructive criticism.
You know, Dr. Pat Sewell is one of the psychiatrists that works with us in our offices. He's an artist, and he always talks about stepping outside of himself and just letting something come out of him, and then finding what's satisfying or what's pleasing to him, and then following that path. That's how he describes it. But it's getting his consciousness out of the way and letting the more creative part take over.
Sure,
him.
Just letting those creative juices flow.
Correct.
Yeah. We have another caller. We have Ben from Dry Prong. Go ahead, Ben.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great.
Great. I wanted to ask you about a movie I saw a couple of years back, but first I'd like to go back to that lady that called a while ago was taking care of her mom.
Yes.
Yes.
And the gentleman that called after her did give some good advice.
Yes.
So, like he was saying, she needs to find an angel, someone that can come into the house, I mean, take care of everything. Don't leave that person anything hard to do, but find somebody that can come to the house 2-3 times a week, a couple hours a day, then she can get out. For me, it was a friend of my parents that actually did it. And I went and did some volunteer work a couple hours a week. I didn't get to go fishing for a couple of years, but I was able to get out of the house, and it really lightened things up. Now, the movie I wanted to ask you about was a couple of years back. It was Down the Rabbit Hole or something like that. And let me see. They were saying that a person could become physically addicted to an emotion. The enzyme or hormone, whatever causes happiness or sadness or whatever. Basically, if a person is in a situation where they're down for a while, a couple of years, a couple of months, whatever, after they come out of that, they can still find themselves, they won't find themselves, they'll, without knowing what they're doing, they'll be looking for something to bring them down. Instead of saying, what's up, they'll say, what's wrong? You know, stuff like that. Is there anything to that?
Well, we can be too happy. That sounds kind of strange, but happiness is something that we experience, but we shouldn't expect to experience all the time. Sadness is going to be very natural in some situations when we have a loss, when there's a death, maybe a divorce, or we lose a job, something like that. It's normal to be sad during those times. So I think that constantly chasing happiness or something like that, it's just not going to be possible. So yeah, there are going to be times when we're down, and we should feel that sadness and process it and kind of move on.
Yeah, I've always thought that the emotions, mainly, sadness and anger and scare, anxiety, all of those are normal feelings for most of us people. And the lady who was called in earlier about losing her husband and a year and a half or 2 years ago, the real emotions that she's having can, even though they're maybe unpleasant, can be very, very healthy once they're embraced.
Mm-hmm.
And once you, I always try to teach people to not run away from sadness, to not run away from anxiety, to not treat it with alcohol or gambling or spending money and so on.
Yeah, we can get in these loops where we almost become engulfed in the sadness and almost become addicted to it. And so it's really important to get out of that loop and start a happiness loop that we get into, create some behaviors and some activities to help us get out of the sadness and into the happiness. Dr. Vegan, do we have any more questions for the guests?
I was going to ask a quick question about goals. I've always taken the position that one should be passionately involved in the process and detached from the outcome, because so many outcomes we just do not control.
Right.
But I'd like to urge people to be passionately involved in the process of whatever it is they're doing. But does that mean that we shouldn't pursue goals? And, you know, Chief Johnson, you were talking earlier about the need to have goals and so on. What is your view about getting toward the goal versus achieving the goal, or how do you integrate those two?
I really appreciate what you just said as relates to doing all that you can, being the best that you can be, preparing as best as you can, and then recognizing that the outcome that you have no control over, you can't do much about that. So that's a very good point. As a matter of fact, I'm making that note. But as it relates to goals and pursuing goals, I think that most people, professionally speaking, commit to themselves to be the best that they can, to do the best that they can in whatever that effort or endeavor might be. So I think as far as goals go, professionally, and especially in our line of work, you know, it's a rank or organization, and there are things that you can do in order to prepare yourself. And so I think that preparation is the key. Knowing your job, doing your job, identifying which area of progress will make you the happiest, and then doing all that you can to, quite honestly, not only be the best that you can be, but if it's goal and if it's rank oriented, doing what you can to be better than others who are pursuing the same. So it keeps you always working toward being better.
Listen, I want to take this opportunity on Shelley's behalf and my behalf to thank both you, Chief Johnson, and Chief Smith for coming tonight. I appreciate the work you've done. I also want to thank our callers. And in particular, I think I forgot to thank the young man or the older man, the Buddhist, who served our country in Vietnam, which I think is just incredibly outstanding.
Yeah, we had great callers, didn't we?
Outstanding group of callers. We thank all of you very, very much for helping us with our mental health edition of Mental Health Matters.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. This show is available for download from RedRiverRadio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance was provided this evening by Kermit Poling and Daniel Gordy. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Thank you for joining us this evening.